Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. We are recapping the Rockets' 113-104 win over the Kings in a game where, I guess, revenge is best served in Sacramento? It felt nice to get this win, especially with how the Rockets lost the last time these two teams matched up in Houston off the Bielitsa 3 to win the game for the Kings. That game left a really bitter taste in your mouth, especially because you walked away thinking there's no way that they're losing this game off the really clutch Westbrook layup to put the Rockets up 2, I believe it was, or put them up 1, whatever it was, and the Kings just, you know, they came away with the win off the Bielitsa 3, and that sucked. That really did. You know, those heartbreaking losses where you lose off of a last-second buzzer beater are never any fun for anybody on the losing side of things. I think I remarked right after the loss that it wasn't quite 0.9 seconds, but it still hurt. But that was not the case against the Kings on Monday evening. The Rockets come away with the win, improving to 21-9 on the season. Kings fall to 12-18. Just 6-6 at home for the Kings. Pretty rough there, a little 500 record at home. Now for the Rockets, you know, they actually came out really strong in this game. And I went and looked at some of the numbers because we've seen this team have stretches where they're really, really dominant. And then we've also seen them start these games, and this is the usual issue, is that they start games kind of sluggishly. They come out the gate with not enough intensity, not enough effort, and then they wind up having to dig themselves out of these holes late in games, or over the course of a game, I should say. And the numbers actually backed that up. As far as their net rating is concerned, the Rockets, quarter by quarter, rank somewhere, it's like 20th in net rating for the first quarter. Then they're ranked 3rd in net rating for the second quarter, 2nd in net rating in the third, and then they're back like middle of the pack again in the fourth quarter, like 17th or 18th or something. So that kind of matches the eye test where these Rockets are capable of playing really dominant basketball, but for whatever reason, they're only doing it in the second and third quarters. It's like they need a little bit of time to wake up, and then by the fourth quarter, they're like, all right, we're just going to kind of try and coast to the win. And that's why we've seen some close games. That's why we've seen them drop some close games against teams that they have no business losing against because of those lackluster fourth quarters as well as the lackluster starts to certain games. But again, it seems like they're doing well in the middle parts of the games, which is great. And ideally, if they can just kind of shore up that first quarter and or that fourth quarter and play with the same level of intensity that they're playing in those second and third quarters with, then this team's going to be really hard to beat. And they did that against the Kings. They came out and they were absolutely dominant in that first quarter. I mean, you start the game 37-21. That's a nice 16-point buffer to start up the game. And then you come back, Sacramento wins the second quarter 36-28. That's fine. You still got yourself a 10-point lead at halftime. Rockets come back out, have a really strong third quarter, again, matching the numbers, 32-22. So you've got a 20-point lead headed into the fourth, but the fourth quarter was the issue. The five-minute drought, that's about how long it was. I think it was a little bit over 5 minutes of game time. The Rockets, Ben McLemore specifically, drilled a three at the top of the fourth quarter, putting them at 100 points, and then the Rockets went on a five-minute game-time drought where they did not score at all. Took a James Harden free throw at 6:41 left in the fourth quarter, was the first points after the Ben McLemore three. And the Kings at that point had crept within, 8 points. So the Kings came all the way back from being down 100-79, and they crept all the way back into it, made it a bit of a game, 100-92. James makes a pair of free throws. Fox comes back, hits his pair of free throws, and you know, they keep pushing. They get really close at 102-96. Kind of became a bit of a nail biter, and you're thinking, okay, Rockets are going to choke this one away again. But luckily, they came back down. They got some shots to go. Westbrook hit a very timely three-pointer. James Harden, again, down the stretch, very clutch, hit a three, hit more free throws, basically kind of sealed up the game right there at the very end. But the fourth quarter was not pretty. I mean, those are the things that will absolutely kill you against the more elite teams in the league. Because again, and you know, the announcers like to talk about it, we talk about it here, but no lead is big enough in today's NBA. And that was readily apparent against the Kings on display last night as we talk early Tuesday morning. Again, a 20-point lead headed into the fourth quarter that you balloon up to a 23-point lead. And it just evaporated before their eyes. And had that been a better team than just the Sacramento Kings, the 12-18 Sacramento Kings, the Rockets may be looking at a loss right now instead of a win. But they did win. And everybody performed pretty well for the most part. D'Antoni ran with an 8-man rotation. James Harden, 34 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, had a couple steals, had a block. Again, low turnover numbers between Harden and Westbrook, which is what you like to see. Those two guys, Harden 3 turnovers for Westbrook, that's great. Keeping the ball a bit more under control, not forcing those or not creating those live ball turnovers is huge for those two guys. Because again, you create the live ball turnover, what do you have to do next? Play transition defense. And we've been over it. This team is not great in transition. At least not great defensively in transition there. Offensive transition game is wonderful, especially with freight train Westbrook leading the charge. And speaking of Westbrook, he had 28 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal. Shot relatively well, especially from behind the arc, surprisingly. 10 of 22 overall, but 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Now, I will go ahead and say, do not get used to these numbers. I think this was just a one-off fluke. I don't think Westbrook's about to suddenly become a consistent 40% three-point shooter, but look, I mean, I hate the expression. Well, maybe I don't hate the expression, but you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. There are going to be a couple games here or there where Westbrook decides to pull up from three a bit more than usual and actually hit them. The worry is that he's going to carry that three-point shooting confidence into the next game and then go like 1 of 6 or like 2 for 9. So as long as he doesn't start jacking up threes thinking he is the second coming of Ray Allen, then we'll be okay. I'll take 3 of 4 from behind the arc from Westbrook. Speaking of shooting well from behind the arc, Daniel House, very welcome to have his shot back. 14 points, couple boards, didn't have a single dime, steal, but he shot 4 of 8 from behind the arc. Having his shot back is great. Because again, between him and PJ Tucker, they get so many attempts from behind the arc that if they're not shooting a combined, like, above 40%, then you know the Rockets are going to struggle on any given evening. But as a team, they did shoot 38.5% from behind the arc, which is a respectable number. That's well above the league average. PJ Tucker struggled a little bit, just 1 of 4. But again, when you combine PJ Tucker and Daniel House, you take 4 of 8 from House, 1 of 4 from PJ, 5 of 12, you'll take that out of your two starting forwards. That's a respectable three-point shooting percentage and one that you can pretty much rely on from those two guys who are, you know, pretty consistently right around the 40% margin at this point of the season. On the Kings side of things, nobody really notable other than De'Aaron Fox. He is fun to watch. He is a blur out there on the court. 13 of 21 shooting, 31 points overall, had 6 assists, had 9 rebounds. That I thought was a little shocking, but I guess you know, Rashawn Holmes can't snatch everything out of the sky. Holmes had 13 rebounds. But overall, really strong game from him, and he is going to be a force down the line. I mean, you can see it already in the works right now. But we'll keep talking about some of the other points of this game that I want to get to in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets 113-104 win on the road against the Sacramento Kings, improving them to 21-9 on the young season. Can I still say young season? We're 30 games in. You know what? Young season. We're going with that. Anyways, something that I want to talk about really quick and that stood out to me in just a few moments from last night's game is Westbrook's decision making. And, you know, when you talk about decision making from a basketball player, that relates back to their basketball IQ. And that was a huge concern for a lot of Rockets fans, for myself. A lot of the media were concerned about it too, about the drop off necessarily from Chris Paul to Russell Westbrook, because Chris Paul, for all intents and purposes, is one of, if not the best floor general in the league, as well as one of the highest IQ players in the league, right up there with, you know, LeBron James. So you worry that the switching out of Paul to Westbrook, that you're going to lose out on some of that and how that rubs off on the rest of the team and how you're going to handle things like late in game clutch situations, how you're going to handle late shot clock possessions, just overall how you handle the team on the court and how the team handles themselves, because you don't have that high IQ basketball leader, almost like having a coach on the floor at the same time as the rest of your players. Now, I'm not going to make the argument that Westbrook can fulfill that role. That's not who he is. However, I will posit that Westbrook, ever since this 7-8 game stretch that he's on, I shared the graphic last night on Twitter showing his stats over the last 7 games compared to his first 19 games as a Houston Rocket, and everybody's been remarking on it, his health was a big concern. And at one point, I even discussed it where, look, if you're not healthy, if you're used to playing a certain way, a certain brand of basketball with a certain level of explosiveness or being able to rely on a certain touch around the hoop or whatever it may be, you know, things that definitely impacted him based on the offseason knee scope as well as the dislocated fingers, those issues are going to directly affect your decision-making ability. And through those first 19, 20 or so games, Westbrook definitely didn't look comfortable. He looked at times like he was overthinking things, like he was making rushed decisions, that he wasn't able to play his version of basketball. And a lot of that was probably because he was hampered a bit by not being quite in shape the way that he wanted to be, not having his hand feel quite the way that he wanted it to be, you know, not quite 100% in that regard. So now we're getting to look at this version of Russell Westbrook that does feel comfortable, that is out there on the court playing the way that he wants to play, the Russell Westbrook that we thought we were getting as advertised heading into the season. And the play that stood out to me a lot from last night was, I'm not sure, I want to say maybe third quarter when it happened, but Westbrook got the ball on the three-point line, wide open three, could have taken it, hesitated for just a moment, and then kicked it back to James. So I think it was probably James who was the guy who initially passed it to him, so off of a double team more than likely or whatever it was. Most of you will remember this possession because even Matt Bullard spoke about it on the broadcast saying, now that was Westbrook passing up what would have been a good shot for a great shot from James Harden, who's a much better three-point shooter. And that's absolutely true. That's Westbrook just being a bit more comfortable, having the chance to make these good decisions on the basketball court. And it's not limited to just that. That's just the standout moment that I had from last night's game, where you see it and, yeah, Westbrook's wide open. And you're thinking, okay, he's going to take a wide open three. We'll take our chances with Mr. 23% or whatever it is. But instead, no. He had that moment of clarity where he just hesitated for just a moment, got it right back to James, and James drilled the three-pointer. That's great basketball from Westbrook. That's what you want to see from him. So seeing that, seeing his decision-making overall on the evening, six assists, he had a couple really nice ones to Clint Capella, and he even was on the receiving end of a really nice dime from James Harden as he cut the baseline. And James, being the willing passer, you know, as terrible of a teammate as he is, wonder how he gets so many assists. God, national media. Anyways, Westbrook cuts the baseline, right? James drops the bounce pass down to him, and Westbrook just grabs it and goes straight up for the baseline jam. It was wonderful. And then on the very next possession, James had another beautiful assist to Clint Capella, who got to slam it home as well. So watching these guys start to mesh and start to gel and really start to develop this chemistry, seeing Westbrook get more and more comfortable with each passing day in a Rockets jersey, it's great. Some people were saying it last night on the Twitters. I'm getting some vibes of the 17-18 team. I really am. Because now you're getting these dominant performances from both of your star players. You're not losing the Russ minutes that he's on the court. Again, Russ last night was a plus 19. In fact, was that the team high? Yeah, that was the highest plus-minus factor on the team. So you're not losing the Russ minutes necessarily anymore, which was huge. And you're doing all this still without Eric Gordon. And when he gets back, I think I threw out commenting on the Utah Jazz who traded Dante Exum for Jordan Clarkson, Dante Exum and a couple second round draft picks for Jordan Clarkson, and then proceeded to waive Green, was it? Yeah. So a couple Rockets fans were thinking, hey, we should go after Green, and I'm not so much on board with that. He's not a phenomenal 3-point shooter, and there's a reason that he's been on 9-10 different NBA teams throughout his career. Anyways, to get back to my main point, which was that the Rockets actually rank dead last right now in bench scoring across the entire NBA, just 27 points per game off the bench, which is pretty abysmal, all things considered. Now, somebody did highlight to me on Twitter, and, you know, I know this, but when you've got the James Harden, Russell Westbrook staggering of lineups, and you stagger the two stars as much as you do, Russell Westbrook is effectively a bench player because he is guiding that bench unit. However, even if you were to say, okay, great, Westbrook is a bench guy, take half his point average. So even if you take half of his point average for the season, which is somewhere around the 23, 24 points per game mark or something like that, if you take half his point average, and then you drop that directly on top of the bench average so Westbrook's at 23.8. So we'll say 24 on the season for Westbrook. Even if you take half his average and say, okay, Westbrook's scoring half of his points during the Russ-only lineups, then you add 12 points to 27, it still puts the Rockets middle of the pack. They're still sitting at they'd be 15th in the league if the metrics didn't count him as a starter versus a bench player. And again, these are very ballpark numbers because that's not how it works at all. But again, my main point was just the Rockets do miss Eric Gordon. They miss that scoring punch off the bench. And even though the numbers don't truly reflect the Rockets' style of staggering their two superstars, that 27 points per game, that's still what you've got technically coming off your bench between McLemore, Rivers, Clark, Cephalosha, Chandler when he plays. And that's good enough to rank dead last in the league. So that is your bench. And even though the Rockets do stagger their stars, doesn't matter. Because again, even if you credited Westbrook with half his points being scored during those bench units, they'd still only be middle of the pack in the league. And I'd like to see them jump up into the top 10 as far as bench scoring. And I think Eric Gordon, when he comes back, will help provide that spark, that burst, and get those numbers to be a bit more respectable overall. Bit more to talk about on the other side, so don't go anywhere. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets 113-104 win over the Sacramento Kings. Now, for this final segment, I do want to talk about a couple things that Roosh Williams posted last night on the Twitter. If you're not following him right now, go do that, at Roosh Williams. He is a diehard Rockets fanalist, and he throws some great stuff on Twitter. He's one of the guys that you need to be following on Twitter if you're not doing that. He has some wonderful thoughts that he shares about the Houston Rockets, and I want to touch base on a couple of his points that he made last night immediately after the game. Now, the first of which is that right now, thank you, Roosh, for pulling these numbers if you're listening. Right now, the Rockets are 21-9. In 2017-2018, they were 25-9 and 11th in defensive rating. Right now, they're 21-9 and they rank 16th in defensive rating. And their next four games come against the Golden State Warriors, the Brooklyn Nets, New Orleans, and Denver. So four very winnable games. On top of that, you've also got Eric Gordon, who returns to the lineup very soon, either at the end of this month or the beginning of January. And so basically, if they can win the next four, they're in the exact same spot that ever-so-dominant 17-18 squad was in. And arguably in a better spot, because you've got two MVP-caliber guys playing like the MVPs that we know that they can be now, and you've got a really nice set of role players around them, and on top of all that, you've done all this, again, missing Eric Gordon. So for all the overreaction and all the concern throughout the earlier part of the season of how this is going to work. Will this work? Was the Chris Paul trade a mistake? It was probably a bit overboard at first with all the worrying, with all the concern. Again, the mesh of James Harden and Russell Westbrook wasn't bound to be as clean as the Chris Paul acquisition was at first, because again, Chris Paul was able to slot in and basically just be a spot-up shooter next to James Harden. And then once they did develop their chemistry, we all know what happened. 65-17. Most franchise wins in history. So yeah, Chris Paul was better equipped, better tooled with his variety of skills to just slot in next to James and just be a spot-up shooter and then still kind of get back into his Chris Paul mojo to run the second unit, along with the kind of staggering setup that we've become used to with Mike D'Antoni and with the two ball-dominant guards that we've seen in the last 2.25 years so far. Now, that being said, Russell Westbrook, he needed a bit more time. He needed some time to kind of mesh, to gel with the rest of this offense. He needed some time to get himself right physically, to get healthy. And now we're seeing the fruits of that labor. We're seeing the fruits of this trade really pay off. Because now we're getting, on a consistent basis, I think an 8-game stretch is a pretty, it's not a negligible sample size. Seeing Russ play like the Russ that we thought we were getting over the course of these last 8 games has been so refreshing. He's looked like the MVP talent that they traded for. He's looked like the guy that you traded your future away for. Because again, the Rockets gave up 2 first-round draft picks and 2 rights-to-pick swaps for Russell Westbrook during the era where James Harden is more than likely going to be retired. So Rockets basketball may be rough for a little bit, you know, a few years down the line, if Daryl Morey can't recoup some assets to help expedite a rebuild further down the line, but that's not what we're worried about right now. We're worried about James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who are right both smack dab in the middle of their primes, and these are two guys, two former MVPs, who they don't have to worry about the Golden State Warriors anymore. The Golden State Warriors are not an issue this year, and for as well as the Milwaukee Bucks and LA Lakers have played, neither of those two teams are anywhere near the level of dominance that the Kevin Durant Warriors were at. They're just not. The Lakers are very easily beatable. We haven't seen the Rockets play them yet, but they're on a 3-game losing streak. And yeah, sure, one of those games came without LeBron, but I don't buy into the Lakers being, you know, a clear-cut championship favorite. Right now, they are top of the conference, absolutely. And they've been playing some great basketball. But they've also had a lackluster schedule to start the season. When things get tough for them, I genuinely wonder how they're going to handle teams when they successfully slow down both of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. At what point, who else is going to step up for them? I don't see any of their role players consistently being able to step up and be that, you know, 20 points a night guy. The Rockets have that. They have their X factor who's coming back very soon in Eric Gordon. The Clippers have that. They've got Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. They've got guys who can step up if the defenses are keying in on Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Even the Nuggets have that because they've got a really great core of guys who there's not really, even though Jokic is the star for that team, he's not the guy who's pumping out all the insane numbers. On any given night, any one of their shooters can go off. And Jokic can sit there and have, 10, 15 points and a baker's dozen of assists. So the teams across the West, I think, are better equipped to go along further in the season and better equipped for the playoffs than the Lakers are. And again, I could be overestimating the Rockets' abilities as a team, but I think when you've got a duo of James Harden and Russell Westbrook and they're playing this well together, you can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the league. And again, without the Golden State Warriors being an issue this season, the NBA is as wide open as it has ever been. There is no favorite. The favorite isn't the Bucks. It's not the Lakers. It's really, maybe if Kawhi had stayed in Toronto, Toronto would be the clear-cut favorites. I think that everybody can agree to. But right now, the Bucks don't look that scary. Neither do the Lakers. And then in the West, again, right after the Lakers, you got, Rockets, Mavs, Clippers, Nuggets, kind of all in that same tier. And even still, the Rockets are only just three games back of the first seed. They're a half game back of the two seed because Frank Kaminsky could not seal out the game against the Nuggets last night, unfortunately. So the Nuggets still a half game ahead of the Rockets in the standings. But the Rockets are making their push. They're doing it very loudly, and they're doing it on the backs of Russell Westbrook and James Harden and the rest of the guys who are pitching in. Got to give credit to the rest of the rotation guys. Again, when you're looking at it, it looks like D'Antoni's really found the three guys that he trusts off the bench, which I'm really happy that Gary Clark fell into that spot. It's great. Now, granted, Thabo Sefolosha did not play because he had the illness, which hopefully isn't the same illness that was terrorizing the Rockets locker room before. But Thabo did not play in this game. So Gary got the nod for those minutes. So Gary got 10 minutes off the bench, Rivers with 16, and Ben McLemore with 24 minutes off the bench. Again, still a little frustrating to see eight-man rotations being thrown out this, at this point in the season. The starters all played roughly about 40 minutes a pop, with the exception of House, who only got 32. But you got PJ at 40, Capella at 41, Westbrook at 40, and Harden at 38. And Capella played that entire game. So again, 15 and 14 for Capella, played the entire game on that sore right heel. So it wasn't quite as explosive as we're used to seeing him be. But still had a really good game overall. And once you get Eric Gordon back, that's kind of the rotation that I'm picturing. Is you get Eric Gordon back, and he'll absorb some of those minutes across the board from the starters. And that'll be your bench team. Eric Gordon, first guy off the bench, then Rivers, then McLemore, and Gary Clark. And then you just cycle around all those guys. And whether you've got Gary playing, stretch four alongside Capella, or you've got some minutes where Clark's playing the center spot, that looks like a really strong lineup. And that looks like a lineup that could push for being a top 10 defensive team later in the season. So I think that's where we'll wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and of course the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and of course our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that show up straight to your inbox before they get published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for this Tuesday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, I suppose. This is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.